You know, I realize a lot of this is, you know, kind of negative and not really uplifting and doesn't really make your heart glad. But, you know, there could be some, not could be, there are real serious connotations to this. You know, there could be some really bad things come out of this. And I wanted to share this with you before I went on to the final talk. Roger mentioned Al Gore earlier in his book on ecology, remember? Well, anyhow, you know, Al Gore almost became president of the United States. Very close, and I have some information here to share with you. Al Gore, even though he's a Southern Baptist, is very much into New Age spirituality. When Time Magazine did an article in 2003 called Just Say Om on meditation, you know, in the mainstream, I think I showed a picture of it on Time Magazine yesterday, Al Gore made the following statement about meditation. He says, we both, that's him and his wife, Tipper, we both believe in regular prayer, and we often pray together. But meditation, as distinguished from prayer, I highly recommend it. So he made it clear that, you know, he was into meditation alongside of prayer. And there was a book by Ken Wilber. Ken Wilber is a Buddhist and one of the foremost philosophers in New Age spirituality. And Al Gore's endorsement is on the back cover. And Gore said, one of my new favorites. You know, so that's a pretty strong endorsement. But probably the most telling doesn't come from Gore himself, but from a man named Neil Donald Walsh. Now, Neil Donald Walsh is a channeler. He's channeled, I think, three books called Conversations with God. How many have heard of Conversations with God? Oh, quite a few of you. Okay. Very blasphemous, very blasphemous. And Neil Donald Walsh was at a conference in Portland, and this was tape. This was caught on tape. This is Neil Donald Walsh talking. You know Al Gore? I know Al well, and he says to me, hey, Neil, I used to be the next president of the United States. Al has read my books and loves them. But he can't possibly say that publicly. He should be able to. And in the society we're going to create, he will be able to. But right now, he can't. So, you know, this guy came within a hair's breadth of being president of the United States, and he loves conversations with God. Now, there's an even spookier connotation to that. Like I have some stuff from Conversations with God here. Basically, it's what you've been hearing. You know, here's one. This is from Neil Donald Walsh's God. There's only one message that can change the course of human history forever, end the torture, and bring you back to God. That message is the new gospel. We are all one. We are all one. And not just one in the sense of like, we all share a common humanity. I mean, you know, people are the same all over the world, but this means we are all one in the sense of, in the spiritual sense, we are all God. Well, this is, you know, kind of a spooky thing when you hear what I have to say next. So, Neil Donald Walsh channeled only three books. He didn't channel a lot of them. He channeled, it's called books 1, 2, and 3. You know, it sounds almost biblical, right? But anyhow, so there's not like, you know, tons and tons of material you have to go through and you might miss something, right? If there's only three books, then that means they're pretty concise. And remember what he said, that Al Gore loves them, like plural. In other words, he loves all of them, right? All of them, you know, he loves them. That's what Walt said. Okay, I have three statements from book 3 from Conversations with God, and this is Neil Donald Walsh's God speaking. And if Al Gore read this and still loves these books, you know, then you'll kind of understand why this conference is so vital, why you need to really warn people about this. And you can check this out, book 3 of Conversations with God. And this is a demonic spirit which claims to be God speaking to Neil Donald Walsh. Are you ready? Have you fastened your seatbelts? So the first thing you have to understand, as I've already explained to you, is that Hitler didn't hurt anyone. In a sense, he didn't inflict suffering, he ended it. There is no death. Life goes on forever and ever. Life is. You simply change form. After you change form, consequences cease to exist. There is just knowing. And that's, you know, like in the concept of higher consciousness, you know, after you leave your body, there's just this consciousness, just knowing. The real issue is whether Hitler's actions were wrong. Yet I have said over and over again, there is no right or wrong in the universe. Now, your thought that Hitler was a monster is based on the fact that he ordered the killing of millions of people, correct? What if I told you that what you call death is the greatest thing that could happen to anyone? What then? So, in other words, Neil Donald Walsh's God thinks that death is the greatest thing that can happen to you, not life, but death. Now, to me, you know, and then I see this as morality being turned on its head. Okay, now what if Neil Donald Walsh was sick and shivering and starving in a cattle car bound for Auschwitz? You know, what if he was being herded into a gas chamber? Would he still think that, you know, what Hitler did was good? No way. So I believe this is the consequences of what we're dealing with here, that, you know, the New Age movement becomes, you know, the general spirituality of Western society, then this is the kind of morality we're going to have. Okay, there he is. This is Morgan Scott Peck. The theme here is universalism and interspirituality, which is what we've been talking about, you know, last night and today. Okay, M. Scott Peck wrote the book, The Road Less Traveled, and how many of you are familiar or know about that book, The Road Less Traveled? Okay, it sold 8 million copies. It was a really popular book in the 80s and then into the 90s somewhat, but probably everybody who, you know, was open to it has bought a copy, so now it's just probably down to a trickle. And I'm going to share with you a number of people who have been very influential, who embrace this view of interspirituality and universalism. Okay, next. Okay, I had a tape from M. Scott Peck called Further Along the Road Less Traveled. Can everybody see back there? Good. And in it he said, I spent 20 years in Zen Buddhism, which prepared me for Christianity. Okay, Zen Buddhism should be taught in every fifth grade class in America. And here's the clincher. Here's the real shocker. Christianity's greatest sin is to think that other religions are not saved. You know, that's a real sin. Well, see, if all religions taught the same thing, then that'd be true, right? If all religions taught exactly the same thing, then he would be right, because there'd be no difference. In other words, if all religions were the same, why should one religion say that they were better than the other if they were all the same? Well, as you know, Christianity is different. You know, Buddha didn't die for anyone's sins. You know, Krishna didn't die for anyone's sins. Muhammad didn't die for anyone's sins. Only Jesus Christ died for the sins of humanity, right? So for him to say that Christianity's greatest sin is to think that other religions are not saved is absolutely outrageous. Okay, next. You have to excuse me. My voice is still kind of raspy from the last presentation, but I think I can get through this. Okay, this is Brian C. Taylor. He wrote a book called Setting the Gospel Free. And what he meant was setting the gospel free from the cross. And he teaches contemplative spirituality, and he's an Episcopal priest. I think he lives in like Albuquerque, New Mexico, and his books have been quite popular in contemplative circles. And he writes, "These contemplatives also recognize their soulmates in other traditions, as did Thomas Merton in his pilgrimage to Buddhist Asia. This is because they have passed beyond the confines of religion as a closed system to an open awareness of God in life." Okay, next. "The God he," that's talking about Thomas Merton, "knew in prayer was the same experience that Buddhists describe in their enlightenment." So you can see why I'm so, you know, fixated on Thomas Merton. He's kind of like to contemplative prayer what Elvis Presley was to rock and roll. You know, he's like existed before him, but he's the one that kind of got it really out there for the masses. So when I hear something like this, you know, I know where the masses are headed. Okay, here's the next one. That's the same picture that Roger had of Henry Now. And like I said, there's only a limited number of pictures on the internet. But he also, you know, shared this sense of interspirituality. I think I read this yesterday, but it's worth repeating. You know, I can't emphasize this enough. I should say this. There was some poll or some survey about people that of 3,400 Protestant leaders. Now, that's all it said, but Protestant leaders who they admired, and Henry Nouwen came in second to Billy Graham. Billy Graham was first, and Henry Nouwen was second among 3,400 Protestant leaders. Okay, Nouwen's, this is about Father Ryan, who runs Ecumenical Center in Toronto. "The author shows a wonderful openness to the gifts of Buddhism, Hinduism, and Muslim religion. He discovers their great wisdom for the spiritual life of the Christian. Ryan went to India to learn from spiritual traditions other than his own. He brought home many treasures and offers them to us in the book." Okay, next. This is a book called Thomas Merton on Mysticism. And again, we find, you know, similar statements. This is Merton. "His change of mind with regard to the higher religions," that's like Buddhism and Hinduism and Sufism, "was not the result of tedious comparison and contrast or even concerted analysis. It was an outgrowth of his experience with the absolute." Now, did y'all catch that? See, Thomas Merton at one time was just a regular Catholic, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, or, you know, 40s and maybe early 50s. He was just a conventional Catholic. But then he started doing contemplative prayer, and then later on in the late 50s and 60s, he embraced Eastern religion. And Raymond Bailey was saying that the reason he did this was not the result of intellectual comparison or analysis. It wasn't like he was going by, you know, the mental aspect of it. It was the result of his experience with, you know, the absolute here means, you know, the supernatural, basically. Okay, next. This is a book called Finding Grace at the Center. It was written by a monk named Basil Pennington. Now, Basil Pennington is mentioned. Remember the last talk I mentioned Gary Thomas? Remember? Gary Thomas and then Rick Warren right after him. Well, Gary Thomas is also highly regarded by others, such as, who's that psychologist, big-time psychologist, Focus on the Family? Yeah, I can't remember his name. My mind just went blank. Well, anyhow, Gary Thomas is featured on Focus on the Family periodically. And Gary Thomas, if you go on his website, you'll find connections with Basil Pennington. And Basil Pennington is the one that wrote this book, Finding Grace at the Center. And he said, "I would like to say that we Christians should not hesitate to make use of the good techniques that our wise friends from the Easter," should be East, our wise friends from the East are offering. We should not hesitate to take the fruit of the age-old wisdom of the East and capture it for Christ. So in other words, Basil Pennington, he's another Trappist monk, believes that Christianity can capture the wisdom of the East for Christ. And as you know, there's no way that can happen, that there's a distinct difference. And we'll get to that in a second. Okay, next one. Let me see what's that. Oh, yeah, there's more. There's more. This is also from Finding Grace at the Center. Many Christians who take their prayer life seriously have been greatly helped by yoga, Zen, TM, and similar practices. TM is Transcendental Meditation. Okay, next. Okay, this is Thomas Keating. He's also very, I think Roger showed one of his books in his presentation. Thomas Keating is another Trappist monk. You can tell that, remember when I showed a picture of Merton earlier, he had a uniform on? Anyhow, this is the Trappist monks wear this certain habit, I guess it's called, and black and white there, and that's Thomas Keating. This, a lot of contemplative prayer seems to come out of the Trappist order. And I've met Thomas Keating personally. He was up in, or down in Portland. leading contemplative prayer seminars at the Episcopal Cathedral there. He doesn't just stay in Catholic circles. And I was able to talk to him, I didn't challenge him, I didn't give him a hard time, but yet I could tell he was scared. There was kind of he clammed up, and he acted really uncomfortable. And I just, asked him normal questions, and I was very polite and cordial, but I could tell he just kind of, clammed up real quick. But anyhow, next one. He says, now this is very, very indicative of the point I'm trying to get across. I mean, all of them are, but this one in particular. He says, in order to guide persons having this experience, divine oneness, contemplative experiences, in order to guide persons having this experience, Christian spiritual directors may need to dialogue with Eastern teachers in order to get a fuller understanding. Now let that sink in for a while. In other words, if a Christian spiritual director is teaching someone contemplative prayer and they're having weird experiences, he says that they may need to dialogue with Eastern teachers to get a better understanding. Now that means that contemplative prayer is the same thing that these Eastern teachers are experiencing. It's like they're better at it than we are, because we're novice. Christians are novices, and they've been doing this for thousands of years. So if weird things happen, you go ask your Buddhist meditator, your Hindu meditator about, Jim's having really weird things going on. And, oh, yes, that's because of blah, 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 that type of thing. Okay, next. Okay, this is the Shalom Prayer Center, which is only about 3 miles from where Lighthouse Trails Publishing is located. And I don't know if you can see it, but there was a Opening the Heart Retreat, October 2002, and this woman came down from Seattle at this Opening the Heart Retreat. I don't know if you can see it, but she was a Reiki master. Can you in the back see that? And if you go in their bookstore, you will find basically mainly New Age books there. You'll find Living Buddha, Living Christ. You'll find Gary Zukav's works about living in the presence of your non-physical guides and teachers. You'll find a lot of books on shamanism. You'll find books on Sufism. You'll find Shakti Gawain's book, Creative Visualization. And basically, it's a New Age bookstore. And I've been in it a number of times. I bought a number of the books I use in my research there. And back then, the nuns were bringing in this Reiki master from Seattle to initiate people into Reiki there. And this isn't some weird cult. This isn't some obscure offshoot. This is the Benedictine nuns, you know, Order of Saint Benedict, you know, very mainstream Catholic organization. So these aren't just renegades. Okay, next. Okay, this is a book called The Mystic Heart by Wayne Teasdale. And he was a Roman Catholic practitioner of contemplative prayer. And I saw him in person in Portland once. Very nice guy. I mean, the people we're talking about here are nice people. You know, they're nice people, but they're in touch with a power, a supernatural power that does not say what the Bible says. I mean, they do not present the gospel. And I want you to know that, you know, I don't hate these people. It's not personal. You know, I don't seethe in my anger against them. You know, I feel sorry for them. You know, I have a loving attitude toward them. But, you know, we believe in the gospel, the grace of God. We believe in the preaching of the cross. And when you go into the Shalom Prayer Center, when you, Thomas Keating and Basil Pennington and, you know, M. Scott Peck and Brian Taylor, you know, they reject the cross. They believe that your true self is divine. Now, people like Gary Thomas, here's where it gets kind of sticky. The contemplative prayer promoters that are in, like, the Roman Catholic Church, Episcopal Church, United Methodist, and I suppose that'd be like the equivalent of the United Church of Canada, the real liberal mainline denominations, they're more open and blatant about their proclivities for Eastern spirituality and that man is God. They're very open and upfront about it. And the ones that, like Gary Thomas, you know, you don't really hear the same kind of thing, but they like the ones who are. Like Gary Thomas seems to like Basil Pennington, and it makes you wonder because, you know, would a true Christian, would somebody who really believes the gospel accept somebody like Basil Pennington? I mean, if they read that, would they still think he was okay? You know, it makes you wonder. You know, it's a big puzzle. You know, people like Gary Thomas, you know, they talk about Jesus and they talk about the cross and all this, and that's why, you know, Dobson likes them. But they also like, you know, these people that are mystics that have embraced other traditions. So it's kind of a complex situation. But in the case of like Wayne Teasdale, it's not complex at all. Next one, please. In the book, he says, third millennial spirituality will also be interspiritual and intermystical. In other words, that's what we've been seeing, that intermystical means that if you're a mystic, if you do contemplative prayer, you're going to resonate with the mystics of, you know, other religions like Buddhism, Hinduism, Sufism, Kabbalah, Wicca, you know, whatever. In other words, anybody who's a co-mystic, you're going to kind of be kindred spirits with. Then he says intermysticism. Okay, what is intermystical mean? He explains it. Intermysticism is a realization that there is one universal tradition of the mystical life with many branches. And basically, you know, that's what Thomas Merton and Henry Nouwen were talking about. See, Nouwen said that Father Ryan brought home many treasures from India, you know, and many, and that these riches from Hinduism, Buddhism, and Islam can be of great help for the spiritual life of the Christian. That is intermysticism to the core. You know, Nouwen pops up, and Rick Warren's wife, Kay, talks about having Nouwen's book in the name of Jesus, and how she says, I'll read it to you. I have it in here. I mean, not the actual book. It'll take me a while to find it, but it's worth hearing, right? They don't like dead air at conferences. But in this case, here we go. I found it. Anyhow, Henry Nouwen wrote a book called In the Name of Jesus. And this is what he says. through the, this is Henry Nouwen speaking, through the discipline of contemplative prayer, Christian leaders have to learn to listen to the voice of love. It's interesting how they use terms. Brennan Manning also uses the term voice of love. It doesn't say Jesus Christ or God the Father. It's the voice of love. For Christian leadership to be truly fruitful in the future, a movement from the moral to the mystical is required. From the moral to the mystical. And I often wondered, well, can't there be both? You know, you know, can't you have morality and mysticism? But I guess not. You have to move from the moral to the mystical. You know, that was kind of disturbing. And this is what Rick Warren says about this book. My wife Kay recommends this book. It's a short book, but it hits at the heart of the minister. It mentions the struggles common to those of us in ministry, the temptation to be relevant, spectacular, and powerful. I highlighted almost every word, you know. And the book, like I said, a lot of the book is on contemplative prayer and how it has to be part of every Christian minister's life. And then when you take into account that Henry Nouwen was intermystical, you know, it's quite disturbing. So, somebody might say, you know, well, yeah, you know, what's so bad about a little being intermystical? You know, it's not that bad of a thing. It's, you know, it's being respectful of other religions, and doesn't everybody have the right to, you know, worship the way they want or believe the way they want? Well, that's true, you know, in Western democracies, everybody can, you know, believe the way they want, and I would never, you know, persecute anybody for, you know, we have freedom of speech. We can point out certain things, right? But I would never advocate burning down people's churches or throwing bricks at them or anything, even saying bad things about them in the sense of them personally. But I believe it's okay to contrast what we've been contrasting, right? Okay, this is one of the verses that I stand on as far as if somebody was to say, well, you know, you're just prejudiced and bigoted, you know. Anyhow, I believe the Bible. I believe the New Testament. I believe the writings of the Apostle Paul. And when he says something, I believe that it's true. And in 1 Corinthians, you don't have to turn to this, but is this it, but I say? Is that it? Okay. In 1 Corinthians 10:20 says, but I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God. And I would not that ye should have fellowship with devils. And to me, that kind of sums it all up, that at that time, you know, the pagan religions sacrificed to devils. And you can see that. Remember what Neil Donald Walsh's God said, that Hitler didn't hurt anybody. He helped him. He ended suffering, you know. He wasn't a bad guy. Death is the best thing that can happen to someone. Well, you know, when Paul wrote this, the Roman Empire, the pagan Roman Empire, was absolutely vile and vicious. You know, every day people were killed for pleasure in the Colosseum. You know, criminals were thrown to the lions. I mean, this is before the Christians were even thrown to the lions. You know, millions, over the course of the Roman Empire, maybe as many as 300,000 gladiators died in combat in the, you know, Colosseum. Prostitution was the most common job there was in the Roman Empire. You know, prostitutes were everywhere. In Greece, ancient Greece, you know, pedophilia was rampant. You know, amongst the Germanic tribes, human sacrifice was rampant. So, you know, all these different religions, their practices were abominable. And, you know, the Judeo-Christian tradition was the only one that really emphasized love and compassion and respect for humanity. You know, that human life was sacred. And, you know, I want to show you some of the pictures. Like, not yet. Remember what Henry Nouwen said, that Father Ryan brought home many treasures from India for the spiritual life of the Christian? Well, here's a picture of who they worship in India. Now, of course, you know, they worship many, many gods. They worship Krishna and Shiva and Vishnu. But I got this out of a book on India. This is one of the gods they worship. I don't know what the name is, but you know, this does not look like the type of God I would want to worship. You know, I mean, I would rather stick with Jesus Christ than this thing. And next one. Okay, here we have an Indian woman basically sacrificing to a Hindu deity. Every house in India, or most houses, I mean, not Muslim ones, but in Hindu ones, they have a little shrine to the local god or goddess, and they believe that if they leave fruit or some kind of food or something, you know, that this god will, you know, protect their house or bring them good luck or something to that effect. So in India, we have people that sacrifice to idols. And the Apostle Paul said that the Gentiles which sacrifice to idols sacrifice to devils. So these treasures that Father Ryan brought home for the spiritual life of the Christian, if you believe the Apostle Paul was correct, as I do, these are from, you know, devils. See, that's why Paul wrote that in the end times, some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. I mean, the idea that man is divine and that all is divine is a doctrine from the satanic realm. These are doctrines of devils. The word doctrine there means teaching. Teachings of devils. Because they come from pagan sources, and that's what we're seeing. You know, Henry Nouwen has embraced contemplative prayer, which came from the Desert Fathers, which got it from pagan sources, and now it's being spread around. And you know, Kay Warren, Rick Warren's wife, underlines practically every page of Henry Nouwen's book on how one has to do contemplative prayer, move from the moral to the mystical. And you know, this is a serious situation. It means that Christianity will change. You know, it will cease being what it has been to become something, you know, more along the lines of Neil Donald Walsh than it has been. So let's go to the next one. Okay, here's another one: Buddha. You know, you go to Thailand or Burma. You know, or Japan, you see statues of Buddha all over the place. And the next square here, I got this from a Buddhist magazine which had this article by a Buddhist teacher. So this isn't critical of Buddhism. This is from a man who is a Buddhist teacher. His name is Reginald A. Ray. And he wrote a article called Understanding Buddhism, and it was a magazine called Shambhala Sun. And Shambhala is, according to Buddhism, is where these spirits dwell. They believe in spirits, but as you'll see, they don't believe in God. Buddhism denies the ultimate existence of any God or deity. The Buddhist approach states that what is ultimately required for human fulfillment is a perfection of being that is found in who we already are. Buddha's advice, seek refuge in themselves and to seek no other refuge. Rely only on ourselves using various methods to explore our own human nature as it exists. And these various methods are meditation. And what he means by perfection and who we already are, that's called the Buddha nature. The Buddha nature, which is the same as the higher self in Hinduism or Atman. And this is what I was trying to convey last night, that everybody who uses, you know, this mystical type of practice where you empty your mind through repetition come out with this view that, you know, there is no God in the sense of, you know, the personal God, but God is like this, like a Star Wars God, this force or energy or all that is, you know, all is God. You know, it's pretty demoralizing. You know, pretty demoralizing. Okay, next one. So, if they were really so close to God, these are people that do contemplative prayer here. Or no, I'm sorry. Where is it? Let me see. I'll read it. It's been a while since I've done this. I mean, this particular slide. If they were really so close to God, they would understand. Oh, yeah, this is talking about Christians. This is talking about people that do contemplative prayer. This is talking about like Brian C. Taylor, you know, setting the gospel free. You know, he does contemplative prayer. If they were really so close to God, they would understand and embrace Christianity to a degree that would be shockingly clear. But in reality, contemplative prayer has taken them the opposite direction. Instead of being valiant stewards of the Great Commission, it has caused them to be immersed in spiritual adultery. And I'm talking about also Nouwen and Merton. You know, all the people that I've shown here. And of course, there's some like Foster. Foster is highly regarded, but he told me personally that Thomas Merton tried to awaken God's people. And remember in the last talk I said that Thomas Merton said he didn't understand Christianity except through Buddhism. It was Buddhism that showed him what Christianity was all about. So, you know, Richard Foster's view of the spiritual is deeply flawed if he thinks that Thomas Merton tried to awaken God's people. And as I showed also earlier, that Richard Foster is the, you might say, the guiding force behind the emerging church and also the purpose-driven movement, in a sense of being like a leader or icon or whatever. So I would say this to those that embrace New Age spirituality or contemplative spirituality, or I would say this to you know, Henry Nouwen, if he were here, or Thomas Merton. Thomas Merton said that, remember that earlier this morning, that we all knew who we really were, we would fall down and worship each other. And Henry Nouwen said that, you know, it's his goal to help everyone find his or her own way to God. You know, whether it's Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, whatever. And all the others, Brian C. Taylor, M. Scott Peck, that said that Christianity's greatest sin is to think that other religions are not saved. You know, this is what I would say to them. This is 1 Corinthians 1:18. For the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but unto us which are saved it is the power of God. That's it.